Okay, so today is the 7th of February, the 2nd of Adar Aleph, be happy. And we are continuing along in the David Bathsheba Uriah story. And today we're going to start on Uriah. But before we do that, I just want to do a little global review. So according to the pshat of the text, as we've read it, it seems like David slept with a married woman and then arranged for her husband to be killed so that he could marry her. So that, and indeed, when we get to the next parak, which is a very famous chapter of Natan, the prophet coming to David and giving him this parable, and David says, that's horrible, that's awful, and Natan said, well, this is you. And the very first thing David says is, I have sinned, chatati. So he admits to sin. We seem to see it in the black and white that there's sin. So why am I now spending my third week trying to explain away David's sins? So the issue here is that, first of all, always keeping in mind just who David HaMelech is and everything we know about him and how we look up to him as one of our greatest role models. Some of that role modeling is his ability to admit when he's done wrong, but still that he's who Mashiach is going to come from. And not only that, but that his son with Bathsheba, not the one that she got pregnant with during the affair, because that son dies, but the next son is the one that's chosen by God. He's referred to as Yedidya, the friend, beloved of God, and he's the one from whom the line of the ultimate Mashiach is going to come. Okay? So we are stuck with this seeming contradiction within Jewish law that we know the halacha, if you have an affair with a married woman, then technically you are not allowed, that relationship is not allowed to continue. And yet, not only do David and Bathsheba get married and stay together, but their child becomes the next king. So we have the issue of who David is, and the heaviness of if indeed he committed adultery and then manslaughter, essentially, which are like horrible sins, and then Shlomo HaMelech, his son with Bathsheba, becoming the king, and our whole history and future of the Jewish people and Mashiach ben David. So these are the issues. So I think this is maybe the basis of the reason why the rabbis want to sort of explain it. And then there are some hints in the text itself that what seems to be in black and white his sins actually aren't. So we've explained away Bathsheba. Whether you thought it was satisfying or not, I'm not sure. We are, even when we finish the text here, we are not done with this story because I have a ton of fascinating stuff that gets into more mystical, like spiritual stuff, explaining it. So the way we explain Bathsheba is the halachic reality that that men at that time would write gittin, divorce papers, for their wives. Either they would actually divorce their wives, which if they were not a Kohen, it would be no problem to remarry them as long as they didn't get married in the interim. Or they wrote them conditional divorces. And the conditional divorce, you have to accept the halachic reality that once the husband is killed in war, the wife is considered divorced from the time he went out to war. Okay? In which case, David, retroactively, in the halachic reality, did not sleep with a married woman. Okay? And now, what we're going to... And then we also had a couple other explanations. One, that Uriah HaChitit, the fact that he's called the Chitit, we entertained that it could be just the location where he lived, or it could be that he tried to be a convert from one of the seven Canaanite nations, of which you can't marry. So they never were married. Or we saw a more disturbing explanation in the Gemara last week that the first time David and Bathsheba slept together, it was rape. It was non-consensual, which doesn't do so much for our view of David HaMelech, but a way to at least get him out of the notion that he slept with a married woman. And then the Malbim also mentioned the fact that the text actually tells us that she had gone to the mikveh, that when she was bathing, it was the mikveh, and that David looked into this, or had his messengers looked into this, to find out if she was tahora, if she was in a state of ritual purity. And the fact that he would be so concerned about that, but yet not Eshet Ish, was unusual. Okay, so that is how we explain Batsheva. We're not done with it because we have a lot more things to look at, but we're moving on in the text onto Uriah. So the way I wanted to get it down to six pages, so I made something small. So I made small all the psukim having to do with Batsheva, but I wanted to include it, and I didn't even put them in the English. And so that's what I did. So let's read the psukim. It's Vav through Tet Vav, and translate, and then we will look at a Gemara on it, and then we will look at the Malbim. Oh, hi, Ruth.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thank you. I just did a review, and now we're starting. Okay. We're starting with Pasuk Vav. Okay, and then, Chaim, just for your sake, I bolded all of the words with shlach, so you see these messengers going back and forth, and then we're going to see that I underlined all the shachav, to lie with somebody, and then we italicized all the shav, the returning. Okay. So, Vav, Vayishlach David el Yoav, Shlach Eli et Uriah Achiti, Vayishlach Yoav et Uriah el David. So, David orders Yoav, he sent to Yoav, who's in the battlefield, to send to him one of his fighters, who happens to be the husband of Batsheva, and Yoav sends Uriah to David. Zayin, Vayavo Uriah Elav, Uriah came to him, Vayishal David lishlom Yoav, vilishlom ha'am, vilishlom acharav, So Uriah came to him, and David asked him how Yoav was, how the nation was, and how the war was going. Chet, Vayomer David l'Uriah, David said to Uriah, Red levetcha, go down to your house, or chatz raglacha, and wash your feet. Vayetze Uriah mi beit hamelech, vatetze acharav mas'at hamelech. So Uriah went out from the house of the king, and after him came out this mas'at hamelech, this gift of the king. Malvim is going to explain all this, don't worry. Tet vayishkav Uriah, and now this, like the same language, and he slept with, which we used with David and Batsheva, with Uriah, vayishkav, he slept, petach beit hamelech, at the opening of the king's house. Et kol avdei Adonav, with all of the servants of his lord, v'lo yarad el beito, and he did not go down to his house. Ve'agidu la David, and they told to David, lemor, saying, lo yarad Uriah el beito, Uriah did not go down to his house. Vayomer David el Uriah, and David said to Uriah, halo miderech ataba madua lo yaradata el beitecha. You've just come from the way, and why didn't you go down to your house? Now, there's actually an interesting connotation here. There's a halachic category in the halachot of male and husband and wife relationships of when a man is coming home or going out to war right around the time that the woman would expect to get her period. And we're, according to some interpretations, we're much more lenient if she's not a nida yet in terms of her ability to be with her husband. So I think David's hinting here a little bit like, you came from the way. You have something you need to do now. You need to visit your wife, right? Because he's trying to create this ruse that if Uriah sleeps with Batsheva, then the child will look like it's from him. Okay. Madula Yeradatel Beitecha, why don't you go to your house? Yud Aleph, Vayomer Uriel David. Uriah said to David, Ha'aron v'Yisrael v'Yehuda yoshvim b'sukot v'Adoni Yoav v'Avdei Adoni al pnei hasadeh chonim v'ani avo el beiti le'achol v'lishtot v'lishkav imishti. Okay, chayecha v'chein afshecha im aseh et hadavar hazeh. So this is how Uriah speaks to the king. The Aron, meaning, right, the Aron, the Malbim is going to explain exactly what that is, because there's a few different Aron note, according to the Malbim, and Israel, and Yehuda, who's from Shevet Yehuda, David, right? So he's, I mean, Yehuda, the truth is always kind of said separately, but the fact that Uriah is doing this also, you have to think something. Yoshvim are sitting in Sukkot, in huts, and my lord Yoav, I've dwelled at Adoni Yoav, because we're going to see the Malvim and the Gemara, based in the Gemara, says that this is one of the reasons why he actually deserved death by referring to my lord Yoav. And the servants of my lord are on the face of the field camped. So Yoav is in a sukkah, I think. No. So they're sitting in Sukkot, and Yoav and the servants are on the field, chonim, camping, and I should go to my house and eat and drink and sleep with my wife. So again, based on what we said before when we introduced it, in terms of David not having gone out to this war, and he's sitting in his house and sleeping and pacing on the roof and looking in on Bathsheba, and so who he actually did sleep with. So this is where he is really giving a commentary on this. So by your life and the life of your b'chei nafshecha and your soul's life, this is a way of making an oath. If I would do this thing, yet that v'yomer David al Uriah, David said to Uriah, shave b'zeh gam hayom. Why don't you sit on this also today? Meaning stay here today. Umachar ashalchecha, and tomorrow I'll send you. Meaning Uriah really wants to get back to the battlefield with his comrades. And David wants to see if he can get him to go to his wife at least one more day. Vayeshev Uriah b'Yerushalayim, but Uriah stayed in Yerushalayim, b'yom ha'hu umi macharat, on that day and on the next day. Yudgimel v'yikra lo David v'yochal lefanav v'yesht v'yishakrehu. So David called to him, and he ate before him, and he drank, and shecher, drunk, he tried to give him liquor to drink. Vayetze ba'erev lishkav b'mishkavo im avdei Adonav ve'el beito lo yored. And despite all of David's attempts, he went out in the evening to go to sleep in his sleeping area with the servants of his lord, and to his house he did not go down. Yudalad vayhi ba'boker, and it was in the morning, v'yichtov David sefer el Yoav. So David wrote a little note to Yoav. V'yishlach biad Uriah, and he sent it in the hand of Uriah. Now we presume it would be sealed with the king's seal, so that Uriah wouldn't know it was inside. Tetvav v'yichtov v'sefer lemor. So what did he write in this little scroll? Havu et Uriah el mul p'nei ha-melchama ha-chazaka. Place Uriah against the strong face of the war. Put him in the heaviest battle. V'shavtem me'acharav v'nika v'mitz. Okay, so he placed him there and go away from him so that he will be hit and will die. Okay? So return from after him. Don't stay with him. Put him there and then sort of leave him there alone so he'll be hit and he'll die. Okay, so we all know what happens, but the goal of this class is to explore what exactly did David do wrong? A lot, obviously. And we're going to see that the Malvim, who's been trying to excuse away all of his sins, we're going to see that the Malvim hones in on events in this passage and really is not nice to him. He doesn't excuse David, and he'll tell us that is the sin of David. We're going to see what it is. But before we do that, I just have to show you one pasuk from the next parak, and this is what Natan says to David after he admits his sin. So madua baz. So it's page 2 on the bottom, second to last source on page 2. Madua bazita et zavar Hashem lasot hara be'enai. Sorry. So why have you flouted the command of the Lord and done what displeases him? Et Uriah hachiti hikita b'cherev. You have put. So it literally says the Hebrew, you killed Uriah the Chiti with the sword. Ve'et ishto lakachta, and his wife you took, l'cha for yourself, l'isha as a wife, ve'oto haragta b'cherev b'nei Amon. And had him killed by the sword of the Ammonites. Okay, so that pasuk is going to come, it's going to be quoted. Okay, so now we're going to do this Gemara that's going to excuse, it's going to tell us, and then the Malvim is going to expand on the opinion of this Gemara. Okay, so I'm going to read part of it just in English, and then we'll do part of it in Hebrew. So Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani, page 3, said that Rabbi Yonatan said, anyone who says that David sinned with Bathsheba is nothing other than mistaken. As it is stated, and this is Shmuel Aleph Yud Chet, and this is with the story of Goliath. And David succeeded in all his ways, and the Lord was with him. Is it possible that sin came to his hand, and nevertheless the divine presence was with him? How could God be with him while he was a sinner? How then do I establish the meaning of the rebuke of the prophet Natan? And this is a pasuk we just read. Why have you despised the word of the Lord to do that which is evil in my sight? Uriah the Hittite you have smitten with the sword, and his wife you have taken to be your wife, and him you have slain with the sword of the children of Ammon, indicating that David sinned. The Gemara answers, and here we will switch back to the Hebrew and the English. So the Gemara answers, David sought to do evil and have relations with Bathsheba while she was still married to Uriah, but did not do so. Rav said, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, who descends from the house of David, the Abarbanel, by the way, says that the only reason why Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, who wrote the Mishnah, is defending David is because he's a descendant, and that you can't take it seriously. So he seeks to teach the verse in favor of David with regard to that which is written. Why have you despised the commandment of the Lord to do evil? Okay, so this is where we're going to go into the Gemara. So it's on top. So it is the second line, Rabbi Omer, so that's Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, Mishune ra'azo mikol ra'ot shebetorah. This evil in this pasuk is different than any other mention of the word evil in the Torah. Shekol ra'ot shebetorah kativ bahen vaya'as, because every other time in the Torah when somebody actually did evil, it uses the verb vaya'as, and he did evil. Vikan, but here, if you look back in the pasuk, kativ la'asot, shebikesh la'asot velo asa. So with David, it's not that he did evil, but to do evil. And the Gemara explains that he wanted to do it, but he didn't actually do it.
Yeah, this comes from the Shorosh La'asot.
Right. So, meaning, usually if somebody did evil, Vaya'as Ra'a, he did evil. But in our Pasuk, where this is from the next parak, the one Pasuk I gave you, so, Madua Bizita Tavar Hashem La'asot Ha'ra, to do the evil. Why have you flouted the command? So this translation is wrong, according to what the Gemara is saying. Does everyone see that if you look at the translation? The translation says, why then have you flouted the command of the Lord and done what displeases him? The translation is translating as if it says vaya'as or va'asita, like asita, right? But how it should be translated, what the Gemara is arguing, why then have you flouted the command of the Lord to do what displeases him?
That's a very standard construction. We have that all the time.
Right. But so the Gemara is arguing that it's actually not standard when it comes to Ra, to evil. I didn't look at all the other, I haven't looked at any other example. I'm just trusting the Gemara here. But it's not so much even what is common or what isn't common. This is what the rabbis are doing to explain David's behavior and what exactly was the evil that he did. Okay, which... let's go back to the English. That which is written... Okay, and he's actually... The Gemara actually is not going to explain it, but Malbim is. So you hold on to until we get to the Malbim. Then... Going back to English, that which is written, Uriah the Hittite you have smitten with the sword, means that you could have judged him before the Sanhedrin as one guilty of treason against the throne, and you did not judge him in that matter. Instead, you had him executed in a manner that deviated from the generally accepted principles of judgment. By the way, while we're reading the Sepharia translation here, the bold is the actual words of the Gemara, and the non-bold is taking into account usually Rashi's explanation, just so you know where it's coming. Okay? And then the small print here, we talked about last week with regard to Bathsheba. So back to the large print on page 4. With regard to that which is written, and him you have slain with the sword of the children of Ammon, it means just as you are not punished for soldiers killed by the sword of the children of Ammon in the course of war, so too you are not punished for the death of Uriah the Hittite. Meaning, so that strange construction of, and him you have slain with the sword of the children of Ammon, means just like in war, you're not punished for killing your enemy. So here, God is placing Uriah in the same category as an enemy, and David won't be punished. Okay, again, the Malbim is going to make this all much more clear to us. What is the reason that David was not liable for the death of Uriah? Because Uriah was a traitor against the throne. As he said to David, and my lord Yoav and the servants of my lord are encamped in the open fields. In the presence of the king, one may not refer to another as his lord. Doing so is treason. So he referred to Yoav as his lord, as opposed to saying to David, which the Malbim is going to explain, your lord Yoav. Okay? Rav said, when you analyze the matter of David, no sin that he committed is found in his lifetime, except for that involving Uriah. As it is written, this is written in Malachim Aleph, because David did that which was right in the eyes of the Lord and turned not aside from anything that he commanded him all the days of his life, save only in the matter of Uriah the Hittite. Okay? So this is the one thing that even the rabbis in the Gemara cannot get away from in terms of David actually sinning is Uriah. Now, but you already see how in the Gemara, they're not, the sin is not the fact that he had Uriah killed, because they're considering Uriah a traitor and that he deserved to die. Okay? So now we're going to go to the Malvim. I'm going to skip that testament. We'll go to the Malvim.
Is that if he's a traitor, there's channels to have him?
Right. You know? So the Malvim's going to... Right.
It still doesn't address that part.
The Malvim does. You may or may not like it. I don't know. Okay, so now while we read the Malbim, you can reference on the bottom of page 6. Oh, I meant to credit it. I forgot even where it came from. I found this little summary of a translation of the Abarbanel's complaints against David, because the Abarbanel is one of the traditional commentaries that really sees David as actually having sinned in all these areas. And the Malbim loves the Abarbanel and models himself after him, so he feels he has to address the Abarbanel's complaints, because the Malbim is among the majority of the traditional commentaries that don't see David as having sinned in these horrific ways. Okay, so he's going to be Malbim's going to be referring to those reasonings of the Malbim of the Abarbanel. Okay, so Malbim in Pasuk Vav, Vayishlach David el Yoav. This is where he asked David to bring Uriah back. Hine po makom ha'ashma hasheni shezachar mahari, that's the Abarbanel, ma sheratza sheishkav Uriah et ishto v'yachrit shem beno mi beit aviv. So this is the second place of guilt that the Abarbanel mentioned, that he wanted Uriah to sleep with his wife and then cut off his son from the house of his father, meaning whatever fetus is in Bathsheba's womb right now that's actually David's, it'll appear as if it's Uriah, and then he'd be cutting off his lineage. Hine gam leze yesh ma'ana. I also have an answer for this. She'achar she'David yada ha'emet shehu bano. After David knew the truth, that it was indeed his son, yishmor zot b'libo le'et matzo. He would keep it in his heart until a certain time. Kishi yigdal hayalad, when the boy would grow up, yigale shehu ben hamelech, he would reveal to him that he was in fact the son of the king, v'sheyimna mikachat mizera hamelech, and that he shouldn't marry any children from the king. Okay? So he'd somehow let him know and keep him from marrying one of his half-siblings. V'im haya get gamur, haya metaken et hakol. And if there had been a complete get, then it would have fixed the whole thing. V'gam ledat ha-mefarshim shehaya get al tanai, and even according to those mefarshim that said it was a conditional get, shelefi ze kvar ratza lechto b'ma shetziva she'oria yelech el beito shebeze yuvtal ha-get v'tia eshet ish l'mafreya. And even if you want to say it's a conditional get, and then he would have sinned in commanding Uriah to go to his house, because if Uriah had gone to his house and been with his wife, then it would have canceled out the gets, and David would have actually slept with a married woman. Okay? But look what the Malbim says. Hine ata haya muchrach lezeh achar shenita bra. He was forced to do this after Bathsheba had become pregnant. Shebehechrach yitgaleh ha-davar v'yitzmach mizeh chilul Hashem, v'gam mered b'melucha kasher kara kizot l'malchei eretz avur inyanim ke'ela. So he's saying, had he revealed everything, then it would have sprouted from this a big chilul Hashem, and also a rebellion against the kingship, as has happened with kings of the land because of matters like this. Infidelity and indiscretions and all these kinds of things. Kamo shekatav Mahari Atzmo, just like the Abarbanel wrote himself. Ubiprat shaita neched Achitofel yo'etz ha-melech. And specifically because this Batsheva was the granddaughter of Achitofel, who was the advisor to the king. Shekviya nir'es sinat Achitofel le-David v'ksharo im Avshalom. So Achitofel is going to come into play later with the rebellion of Avshalom. Achitofel actually leaves David and goes to Avshalom, maybe stemmed from this incident of Uriah and Bathsheba. Sheshamarlo Eva Avur Shalakachet Nechto Bechazaka, because he had this hatred towards David that he took his granddaughter Bathsheba by force. Because otherwise it doesn't really make sense why Achitofel would be opposed to David when David, the whole rebellion against Avshalom is because David is appointing Achitofel's great-grandchild, Shlomo, to be the king. So otherwise it doesn't make any sense. You'd think that Achitofel would support David, that his seed, Achitofel's seed, Shlomo, would become the king. If the thing would have been known immediately, so if everything would come to be known, then for this reason it would have been impossible to do what the Abarbanel did, that she should give birth in a privately, because her entire father's house and her grandmother, everybody would sense something was going on. And therefore, because of the chilul Hashem and the rebellion against the kingship, David was willing to take upon himself this sin of having slept with a married woman retroactively. Meaning, having Uriah come back and sleep with Bathsheba, David is actually sacrificing himself for the sake of the stability of the kingdom so that there's no rebellion and no chilul Hashem. And living with this sin and knowing it was wrong, but for the sake of peace in the land, he was willing to do that. I don't really like it so much, to be honest with you, but this is how the Malbim is trying to excuse David HaMelech's behavior, but I promise you, you'll like what the Malbim says about what the sin was. Okay.
I'm confused, though, because didn't we say, or was it someone else said that it wasn't a sheish because he was...
No, because
to go to, but you mean
if
now,
he actually slept with her, if David had succeeded in getting Uriah
well,
to sleep,
had,
yeah, then it would have cancelled the conditional get.
But you're saying he was potentially prepared to do that,
yeah,
but it didn't actually happen.
Exactly. Thank you. Okay. Asher lo chashav kizot b'sha'a ma'aseh, which he hadn't thought about at the time of the actual action with Bathsheba, shelo ala al da'ato shetitaber, because it didn't occur to him that she would get pregnant. Which also is a little silly, because even in those times they knew that after going to the mikveh was an auspicious time of getting pregnant. So I don't know how you can really say that, but that's what the Malbim would say. Ve'al ze omer chazal, and this is why chazal say in the Gemara that we read, Madua Bizita Dvar Hashem La Sotara Beinai. Why did you fly? You flouted the command of the Lord and to do what displeases him. Should be Kesh La Sot Bilo Asa. So this is what David's sin was. That he planned out this whole plan, and this is what he wanted to do that would create all of these sins upon him. But he wasn't able to do it. Because in the end, everything ended up happening in such a way that what David did was actually permitted. Because they were retroactively divorced, because Uriah died in battle. Okay? So David's main sin was this whole plan of trying to get Uriah to sleep with his wife. Okay. That was his real sin. Okay, let's continue on. You don't have to like it. But it's not very satisfying. I mean, it's based in the text with this la'asot versus vaya'as, like to do, that this is what he planned to do, and that, and it also goes along with the, I don't know if hagiography is the right word when we talk about people in Tanakh, but this notion that David didn't really sin, he thought to sin, he thought about this whole plan of sinning, but he didn't actually sin because it didn't work out that way, but because we hold David to a higher standard, what he had thought to do and planned to do, he's punished, and he will be punished. His life is not a happy bed of roses after this, filled with rebellion and loss of children and all sorts of horrible things.
But also, depending on what you say, how high a standard you hold him to, but if he thought to sin and he had all such great punishments, doesn't it cast doubt on the fact that it was only thought? I mean,
right, so
there was a lot of punishment, unless you say he's on such a high standard that you're
right.
Even thinking.
Right, so that's where we have this conflict of the actual simple meaning in the text, that it looks like he sinned, but on the other hand, Shlomo HaMelech becomes the king. So we have to find a way
that we
can make Shlomo kosher, while at the same time saying that David really did sin. So that's our conflict.
Does anyone say that Shlomo can sort of stand on his own two feet, that Shlomo should be credited for being chosen as the king despite his father?
I haven't heard that.
It doesn't have to be that each person's parents are perfect in order for the child to be deemed.
Right. In fact,
it's a lineage, though.
Yeah, it is passed down lineage. Like, he went to, then the king had David not been his father. And I'm just thinking of one midrash, that when the Beis HaMikdash was completed, the gates wouldn't open until the name of David HaMelech was invoked, and that allowed the gates of the Beis HaMikdash to be opened, even though David was long dead by then. So I think, in fact, it might even be the opposite.
When David was chosen, he was the first.
Yeah.
It wasn't like his father was...
Right, exactly.
There's got to be a first.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think halachically, even, that once a king is anointed, and then if it's passed down to his children aren't even anointed. So there's a sense that it was her, he was born and he inherited it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but good thoughts. Okay, so now Pasuk Chet, Hashelot, here's a question. L'inyan ma siper ki yatsa acharav mas'at ha-melech. So why did the Torah tell us this whole story about David giving him this gift? B'lama liyarad oriya al beito, and why didn't he go home? V'im shelo ratza lishkavi mishto, k'mo shekatuv, and if it was just because he didn't want to sleep with his wife, like it's written, haya yochol libnoa mitashmish, he could have just gone home and not slept with his wife, but still seen her and gone home. Tetvav, machit oriya shetziva lahamito, what was Uriah's sin that David commanded that he be killed? U'madua himitu b'derech shemitu rabim imo, and why was he killed in such a way that others died with him? Velo himito bebeto, and he didn't die in his house. Kmo shekatuv mari, and that's what the Abarbanel says also. Vayomer David l'Uria, red lebeitecha or chatz red lecha, go down to your house and wash your feet. Hine bezeh hamakom yivarar, ki gam ha'ashma hashlishit asher galal mahari al David, Tashuv lo al ma shekatav sharag et Uriah. So now we're going to make clear that the third guilt that the Abarbanel places on David is not that he actually had David killed. Okay, so if you look at number 3 on the other side of the page, it's the manslaughter accusation. Alo sharag et Uriah alo chamas bekapav, that he had Uriah killed without Uriah having done anything wrong. According to Abarbanel, David had an innocent man killed. Ki be'emet haya Uriah chaya b'mita, because the Malvim's arguing, no, Uriah was actually deserving of death, mishlosha tamim, for 3 reasons. Aleph, ma she'avar al pekudat ha'melech, that which he transgressed on the command of the king, She'amar li red the Beitachor achatz reglecha, that David told him, go down to your house and wash your feet. Peirush, ki ba lifnei hamelech ba'avak she'al raglav, ki ba min haderech. So he came to the king with dust on his feet because he came from the way. V'tzivahu she'alech v'yasha'er b'bito. And he commanded him to go and stay in his house. Ki ratza she'lo yelech od l'melchama, rak yasha'er b'bito. David wanted that Uriah would no longer be part of the war, but that he would remain in his house. Ki kein nira mema shebo lo pakad al yedei me'uma, shebo lo pakad al yedei me'uma, rak sha'al to l'shalom ha'am v'hamilchama. So this is what it appears when he came, and he didn't mention any bad thing that he did. He just wanted to ask how he was, how the war was, and how the nation was. And he commanded him to go home. So David therefore clearly wanted him to stay in Jerusalem. But Uriah didn't want to listen to the command of the king to stay in Jerusalem. Uriah wanted to go back to the battlefield. And therefore he slept at the opening of the house of his Lord, like somebody who would just stay a very short time, one night, and then go back to his place. And in this, he rebelled against the word of the king. So that's the first one. Bet. So Uriah went from the house of the king, and after him came this gift of the king. So the Targum Yonatan says, "Se'udata demalka." This is a meal of the king. This particular gift is food. She'esh havdal bein mincha ubein masat. So he says there's a difference between a mincha, which is a gift also, and a masat. I think I'm pronouncing that. Yeah, masat. Shem masat hunach al hamincha. So the word masat is a type of mincha, meaning a gift. Mincha means gift. Sheyitein hanichbad el hanikla linaso v'legadlo. So this is specifically what somebody of a higher power, a more honored position, would give to somebody of a lesser position in order to lift him up and raise him. So David is kind of giving him a promotion. Stay and be considered my honored person here, right? And Uriah is rejecting it. V'chein kabduhu David kavod gadol. David honored him a great honor. Sheshalach lo lebeito mas'at mishulchan hamelech. That he sent with Uriah this gift from the table of the king, kederach hasarim, like the way of ministers. V'lo hayalo lina'etz mas'at hamelech be'enei kol avdei hamelech. And he didn't need to completely despise or mock this gift of the king in the eyes of all the servants of the king. Shenishar petach beit hamelch v'lo halach lebeito lekabel hakavod agadol hazel echol su'dat hamelch bebeito im ishto v'kidei bizayon v'ketzef. So all of the king's servants are seeing Uriah reject this honor of this gift and not eating from the meal of the king in his house with his wife. And it was all a mockery. Okay, so that's the second reason. Pasuk tet, v'zeh shamar v'yishkav Uriah beit Adonav im kol avdei Adonav. Uriah slept in the house of his Lord with all of the servants of the Lord. V'kadei b'zayon lifnei kol avdei ha'melech v'hem hergishu b'zeh. Uriah did it, according to the Malbim, to mock the king and not listen to his command. And everybody else who was around also sensed this. Yod v'yagidu le'David, and they told to David, v'David lo ratza le'odia lo shechara apol she'avar al pikudotav. But David didn't want to let him know that he was angry that he transgressed on his order. Ki chashash ulai not alo hamaso masa. Because David sensed, he was worried, he was fearful, that maybe Uriah knew about what happened. V'ratza lach korza b'masiach lefi tumo. And David therefore wanted to research it by way of this an expression, masiach lefi tumo. Has anybody heard that expression before? So that how he would express it according to his innocence. So this means usually a non-Jew couldn't be a witness, right? But if you're able to ask him a question in such a way that he's masiach lefi tumo, that he doesn't suspect that you're trying to get some specific information for a specific reason, he might then just answer the right answer, because why wouldn't he? So you can use this with kashrut, like if you're somewhere and you want to ask the chef, did you happen to use this pot in the last 24 hours? I don't know, whatever you were trying to figure out. And if, as long as you think he's answering innocently and not trying to get you to eat treif, like he doesn't have an ulterior motive, you can believe him with what he says, okay? So he's trying to see if Uriah will answer innocently or if there's some ulterior motive. And so David said to him, "Halo mi derech ataba? Behold, didn't you come from the way?" Because, and this is what I hinted at before, a man is obligated to visit his wife at the time that he comes from the way. So there's a whole debate in the poskim about what it means to quote unquote visit his wife. And so the Tosfot actually has a beautiful saying that he doesn't actually have to be intimate with her, but whenever a husband's going on a long trip and leaving his wife, he should make a point of saying nice things to her. So it's nice. Nice medieval husband-wife relationships. Okay, so that's it. And it actually is a mitzvah for him to do this. Now, what the mitzvah is, if it's actually having relations or just being nice to her, is up for debate. But this is what the Malbim is saying that Uriah really needed to do. Okay. Okay. Vayomer Uriah. And Uriah said, Heshiv lefi tumo. He answered innocently. Shenim namizot, of why he didn't want to go down to his wife, Aleph. Mitzad sha Aaron v'Yisrael v'Yehuda, shivto shel melech, yoshevet b'sukot. So because the Aaron and Israel and Yehuda, which Malbim is pointing out is the tribe of the king, are sitting, dwelling in Sukkot. Bet mitzad sha Yoav, Adonav v'Avdei David, Ratzon lomar hasarim v'agiburim. So all of the ministers and the big soldiers, chonim al pnei asadeh, they're camped on the face of the field. Ve'enam af b'sukot, they're not even in a hut. So they have to deal with the scorching heat by day and the ice at night. And with these words, Marad Hamarada Shlishi. This is the third rebellion. Kamosha Katuv Chazal, Bimasha Katav Adoni Yoav, and this is what the Gemara pointed out to us, my Lord Yoav. Shehavale lomar ve'avdecha Yoav. He should have said, your servant Yoav, ve'avde Adoni, and the servant of my Lord. Ki Yoav eved David, because Yoav was indeed a servant of David. Kamo shekatav ha'isha ha'tikoit. We're going to learn about this Tekoan woman in chapter 14 in a little while, who is called a wise woman. And we don't know, the rabbis don't associate her with anybody that we already know, but she's some wise woman. Avdecha Yoav, your servant Yoav, because she also comes to David at Yoav's behest. Sam b'fi, he put it in my mouth, et ha-devrim ha'ela, these words. V'gam, shema shekatav chazal be'eruvin, and also what Chazal wrote in a different Gemara, Gemara d'chol zman sha'aron v'shchina shelo b'mkomam Yisrael surim b'tashmish. So they have a halacha that says anytime the Aaron and the Shechina are not in their proper place, Israel is usher with intimate relations. Lo shayach kan, but that halacha is not relevant here. L'masha katav mahari, as the Abarbanel said, shezeh lo hayah ha'aron shebo haluchot, because there are different opinions as to how many aron note there were, how many places to keep the Torah, I guess, there were. And the holiest one is the one that had the luchot in it. And if that one is missing from its place, if they take that one out to battle, then it's true that it's you can't have intimate relations. But the Malbim is telling us that that's not the Aaron that they took out. Rak ha'aron shahiyu menachim bo ha'efod v'ha'orim v'tumim. They only took the Aaron that had the ephod, what the Kohen Gadol wore, and the orim v'tumim, the breastplate. V'ha'aron v'ha'melech shehem ha'ikar yishvu b'mekomam. But the other Aaron with the Ten Commandments and the king, which are the principal things, they remained in their place. And he specifically said, my lord Yoav, ki'ilu Yoav hu ha'ikar, as if Yoav was the principal, v'lo yachin ledaber kein bifnei hamelach, and he shouldn't have spoken this way before the king, v'al kein nitchayav mita kemorad, and that's why he was obligated in death as a treasoner. What's the word? Somebody who commits treason. What? Traitor. Thank you. A traitor. Okay. V'yomer David, shav v'ze gam hayom macha shalchacha. So David said, stay here today and tomorrow I'll send you. Achar shesarav neged dato. After he refused against his opinion, v'ratza lelechet demelchaman, he wanted to go to war. V'gam shechashav ulai lechein nishar b'petach hamelach kedei sheyeshalchu hu lemelchama. So David says, maybe if he thinks he's telling him to stay here, because then he'll send him to war. And now that he's promising that David indeed will send him back to the war, so the first day he came back, Uriah wanted to make it clear that he wanted to go back to war and he wasn't going to listen to the king. And now David's saying, okay, stay one more night and tomorrow I will send you back. So David's hoping that now that he knows he's going to go back to war, that then he'll be willing to go back to his house before he goes out. Especially since David told him he has time, since he's not going to send him back to war until the following day. And he got him drunk, or they drunk. So he's making another attempt to seduce him into going home with hard liquor. And when David saw that none of this would be effective, tetvav v'yiktov b'sefer, then he writes this little scroll. Gam ha'ashma harviviit asher hichbid ma'ari tukal lefi darkenu. So even this fourth presumption of guilt that the Abarbanel accuses David of doing, David thereby caused Uriah and others who fell that day to suffer an undignified death, the Malbim has an answer to. That which the Abarbanel accuses him that David wanted Uriah killed by the sword of the Ammonites, where of course other people from Israel would be killed with him. David was very specific in his orders. She nuhu el mul hamilchama chazaka, place him in front of the very strong battle. Ki hamilchama hitmida gam zulatze gam. So this war was eternal, it was never ending. So meaning, Dove is not creating a war to get Uriah killed. There is a war going on, and it is a heavy battle, and there are great heroes being killed in this war. And the order was to place Uriah there. Hine lo pakad shikrevu al makom sakana ba'avor tachlit ze she'arag Uriah. He didn't command that they would bring close a place of danger for this purpose that Uriah would be killed. Ki hem lachmu kedarkam. He just wanted Uriah placed at the battlefront in the way that warriors are fighting anyway. So he's just saying, commanding, that in this raging battle, they place Uriah among the other great war heroes who are risking their lives in this way, that in the same way that others have been killed. It's a way of war. That they should continue fighting as they were already doing. Rak mashikatav, and here's where the Malbim is pointing out, v'shavtem me'acharav, and return from after him, shelo yatzilu et Uriah, don't try to save Uriah, bezegara mitato, and this is what caused his death. So the Malbim is trying to explain that what David's saying is, don't create any specific battle. There is a battle waging, and people are getting killed. So just have Uriah be part of the people getting killed, and don't try to save him. Don't try to protect him at all. And he was was guilty and needed to be killed. V'lo tishal lama lo hargu b'Sanhedrin. And don't ask me why David didn't bring him to a proper civil case in the Sanhedrin. Ki achar she'a muchrach lisa achar kach et ishto k'mo she'yitbe'er yodea hadavar v'titzmach t'luna merit. Because if he had done it properly with the Sanhedrin, then all of the details would have come out and there would have been a rebellion. L'chein kisa kalon be'arama. And that's why he hid it in this trickery way. Okay, Batishma, Kafvav, Hine Gam Hashma Chamishit Shehigdil Mahari. So this is the fifth one that the Abarbanel thinks David was wrong for taking Bathsheba as a wife immediately after the mourning period. Oh, so Kafvav we haven't done yet. Okay, so let's stop there. So, because that's already out of order. So, the Gemara and the Malbim are saying David did not commit manslaughter. David had a guilty man killed in a battle that was raging and already happening where people were being killed. And David just wanted to ensure that he would be one of the war heroes who would be killed in this raging battle. And he was guilty of, the Malbim brings up, 3 counts of treason in which he deserved this death. And David was protecting the kingdom from any rebellion if the truth came out as to why exactly he was guilty of the things he was guilty of that deserved death.